Hello and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm Avitayer Dana Azband. Our daf of the day, Masechet Bava Kamma, daf Kuftet Zion, page 116. So the top of the daf is an ongoing discussion of the honey and the wine, as we saw yesterday. And as promised, the Gemara relatively quickly shifts into the second case of that Mishnah, namely the river and the two donkeys. Shataf Nahar Chamoro V'Chamar Chamor Chaviro, Shelo Yafeh Maneh. So you'll recall this is the case of two owners of two different donkeys, one that's worth 100 dinar, one that's worth 200 dinar. The river is going to get them both, and the one who owns the 100 dinar donkey is going to come to the aid of the 200 dinar donkey and his owner to save him, right? And this is the case. And the Gemara comes to comment on the Mishnah Utsricha. The Gemara says, you need both the case of the barrels of the wine and the honey and the case of the donkeys, right? Meaning, it seems to be the same parameters, namely, somebody like gives up their own ownership of something for the sake of helping the other person, and to what extent can they make a claim for that which they have lost? And the parameters sound exactly the same. So the Gemara here says, no, you need both cases. Why? De'i ashmi'inan kamaita hatam hu dechi perish yahiv le demekule. So it says, if we just had the case, if we only had that first case, namely the wine and the honey, then it might be the case that we might think that it's only there in that case that, namely, when the owner of the wine gives his, Peresh, he says specifically his stipulation what the case is, then the owner of the honey is going to give him the whole value, the mekule, mishum to be a daim pasid, because that seems to be, and the wine is lost by the direct action of the owner, right? To be a daim, in his hands it was lost, because he actively took that barrel and dumped out his own wine. But here, in this case, with the river and the donkeys, the mimela is happening in any case, meaning this is because of the river. It's not because of anything any person is doing. Then you might think that he can't stipulate anything further with regard to the donkey that he's, not even going after for the sake of helping the other guy with his donkey. You might think that to salvage there, and he can't stipulate it. So then the Mishnah needs to teach both cases to show that yes, he could still stipulate it. What about the reverse? V'yashmin and Seifa. What if you only had the river and the donkey case? Hafahu de bistama ein lo elis charo. Then you might think that in that case where the goal is right to save, he's coming to save the donkey, but he's not stipulating that he's going to get compensated for the loss of his own donkey, mishum de mamela, then you might say again, like this is only just because that donkey got lost by itself, and so he can't stipulate it. Aval hatam de biyadayim, but there in that other case where there's an active, there's an action that he takes to lose his wine, right? He drains it out of his barrel. Ema afilu bestami yahiv leid de mekulitzricha. So then you might think, in fact, that the owner of the wine, if he doesn't specify the case that he wants to get the money paid back, then again, you might think that the owner of the honey would have to give him the entire barrel of wine. And so then the Gemara says, no, in these cases, like both cases are needed to teach that you could stipulate that the owner of the owner who's taking the hit, the loss, could stipulate that this is a condition to get paid back for the fact that he's coming now to help. So Rav Kahana raises this dilemma before Rav as follows. Yarad Latzil va'ala shelo me'alav. Mahu. What happens if a person goes down into the river to rescue the other person's donkey? He stipulated that he's going to be compensated for the loss of his own donkey. And then his own donkey comes out of the river, like just by itself, of its own accord. It didn't drown. So what's supposed to happen? Can he still get the payment from the owner of the donkey that he saved, even though he didn't actually lose his donkey? And so Rav says, in fact, he should still be compensated because it's the heavens that provided him with this rachamim, with this mercy, and the fact that he lucked out isn't going to have any impact on the stipulation, according to Rav. And The Gemara then goes to say, well, this is like an example. Here's the example. Gihad Rav Safra Havaka Azil Bishayarta Levin Hu Hahud Ari. It's a case where Rav Safra was traveling in a shayara, in a caravan, and a lion followed them and accompanied them along the way. Kol Laila Kashadar Minaihu Vaka'achil. Each night, the travelers would give one of the donkeys, they would leave one of the donkeys to the lion, and the lion would eat the donkey. Kimatazam de Rav Safra, Shadarle Chamra Velo Achle. When it was the time of Rav Safra's turn, right, to provide something for the donkey, for the lion to eat, he sent his donkey, and the lion didn't eat it. Kedame Rav Safra Vizachabe. So Rav Safra went and took back his donkey, right? Meaning he's donated it to the cause of the lion's diet. But when the lion doesn't eat it, that doesn't mean that Rav Safra can't get it back. He, in fact, can get it back. He didn't lose his donkey. He fulfilled his obligation to offer it to the lion, right? And the fact that he didn't actually change what he's liable for with regard to all the other travelers. Okay, so I'm going to stop here because really I'm just fascinated by the lion and the donkey story. And what goes on in the coming passage, like right afterwards, is about how what happens, the reason this works is that the donkey is made hefker, it's declared ownerless as in rendering it as food for the lion. So what happens is that when Rav Safra comes to claim it back, he has to kind of reacquire the donkey to be his own possession again. And that's why this is, you know, this is the ownership question that takes an important role here. And then that's exactly the question of the donkey that has kind of flown down, not flown, what's the right word? Floated down the river by itself. And the owner has given it up for loss, right? Which is fundamentally also making it hefker, making it ownerless. Now the donkey comes out of the river. He has to then go and kind of reclaim it as his own if he wants. If he wants to, he can. And that goes back to the point that Rav says, no, he should be compensated. The fact that he's seen better luck here, better luck, good fortune, the heaven smiled on his donkey, and he didn't actually suffer the loss. He is therefore entitled kind of to both. Okay. Yeah, Dana, over to you.
I mean, I just still want to know, like, we've seen a lot of elephants in the Gemara. Lions do not appear so often.
Right? Lions and tigers and bears. I think it's fascinating. I don't know. I feel like I say fascinating a lot, but I think that the lions, you know, to what extent is this a real case? And to what extent is this an example of what they really needed to do? It does seem that Rav Safra's lion is an actual case.
Yeah, I think it was an actual case. It sounds very, very real. All right. Now that we were talking about caravans, the Gemara is going to give us a couple of like halachas around caravans. I'm not going to read all of them, but they have one braisa here that talks about sort of like how did they divide the expenses of a caravan. Tana Rabbanan, Sharia Shaita Mahalacha Bamibar. So a caravan that was traveling in the wilderness, Vamadalaha Gayis Latorfa, and a troop came against it to plunder it. Right? So in other words, some foreign troops come, they said, we want to take everything that's there, but they somehow, you know, agree to take money instead. Machshivin Lefi Mamon, they calculate, right, all the members of this caravan basically have to give a contribution by the amount of money that they are carrying. Ve'ein machshivin lifnei nefashot, but they do not calculate it by the number of people in the caravan, right? So in other words, they're making a very interesting statement with the halacha. Let's say they agree to pay this, you know, these troops $1,000, and there were five people in the caravan. They don't say, oh, each person's life is worth $200. Instead, what they say is, no, it's money that they want. So we just sort of take money from every person, right? And you kind of like, if somebody has more money, they're going to give, you know, more money of the $1,000, which I think is actually a very interesting way to divide this. V'im sarchu tayar ha'alech lifnehem, if the members of the caravan hired a guide to go before them, right, and show, you know, basically direct them how they should go in this midbar, machshivin af lefi nefashot, they calculate the members' contributions to the guide feed by the amount of people as well. because the idea is that the guide helps make sure that they're not in danger as well as money. So for in this case, the calculation has to take into account the number of people in the group as well. Now, I had a little trouble understanding this. What's the distinction of having a guide there? Because the idea of a guide is that you have somebody who makes sure that you won't get lost or you won't get injured by wild beasts or by robbers. So in other words, a guide is there to protect both your person and your money. Whereas if you're just traveling by yourself, you kind of like, in a way, maybe you're saying like you didn't want to pay for a guide. You're really more just worried about your possessions. So if you are worried about the guide, right? If you were worried enough that you decide to hire a guide, the guide is there to save lives as well as property. So therefore, the calculation is based on money as well as the number of people who are traveling with you in your caravan, which, again, I thought was a very interesting way to think about this. However, they should not deviate, right, from the usual practice of the donkey drivers. So in other words, what are they saying about the donkey drivers here? Donkey drivers are usually who made up most caravans. And they would usually calculate their, this is what Rashi explains, they would usually calculate their contributions to the guide's fee totally based on the money that was being carried, or they would do it totally based on the number of people, but they wouldn't combine it. So whatever way the donkey caravan would do it, that's the way that you do it. So it seems to be that it's not something that you would do to, it's not something that you would do for, you wouldn't mix the two. It's either money or it's number of people. Rasha'ina chamarim lahat note shekol mi sheyovad lo chamuro yamod lo chamor acher. The donkey drivers are also authorized to stipulate among themselves that whoever loses his donkey, they will provide another donkey for him, right? So they kind of can make this type of agreement that if somebody loses a donkey, they all have to pay for a new one, right? If any one of them lost their donkey through negligence, though, ain ma'amdin, they don't provide him with another one. Shelo b'chusia, if it was not through negligence, ma'amidin lo, then they do provide him one. V'imamar, and if the one who lost the donkey said to newly, va'ani eshmor, instead of giving me the donkey, give me money so I can purchase my own donkey and I'll guard the other donkeys with you, ain shomim lo, we don't listen to him. Because the idea of giving him a donkey is so that the donkey can help, he'll sort of participate in guarding the other donkeys. But if you just give him money, right, he may just keep the money and he may not actually bother to actually purchase a donkey. And then he's kind of like not invested in the caravan the way the other ones are. Now, the Gemara basically says from here, pshita, right? It's obvious. Of course, they shouldn't just give him the cash. Why would the Bryce have to say so? So the Gemara answers, lo tzricha d'isle chamra achrina. No. The Braisa is needed in a case where he has another donkey in the caravan, right? Let's say he has two donkeys and one gets lost. And so they, had agreed ahead of time that they would replace it. Ma detema ha ka minatarle, right? You might have said that since he's guarding that donkey, we don't need to buy him the second donkey and they could just give him the cash. Kamash malan, shani niturta dechad miniturta devei tre. The Braisa basically tells us that a person's guarding of a donkey is different than guarding of two donkeys. The more animals he has, basically, the more he's going to try to make sure that they're okay. So even if he has one donkey, invested in it, we're still not going to give him, they're still not going to give him cash. I'll read one more braisa that they quote here. I won't do the discussion, but also very interesting. Tanu Rabbanan, Svina Shaita Ma'alachad Bayam, a ship that was traveling in the sea, Amarala Nachsholitova, a gale, right? Storm threatens to, overwhelm it. Vekilu mimasa'a. And so the passengers throw over some of the cargo. Machshivin lifne masui. They calculate each person's portion by weight. Ve'im machshivin lifne mamot. And here they don't calculate by value. Velo yishanu mimin hagasfanim. But they should not deviate from the usual practice of sailors. Meaning, if the sailors had a custom to calculate by weight or by value, that's what they should do. The sailors often would make a stipulation with themselves that if somebody lost their ship, they'll provide another ship, and anybody who was part of that party would have to pay for it. If a person's ship was lost through negligence, ain mamidin, they don't provide a ship, shalobuchusia, but if it wasn't through negligence, mamidin lo, they do provide it for him. But if he went into a place where ships don't go, right? In other words, he went to a place that wasn't really considered safe to sail, and he lost the ship, ain mamidin, you know, we don't have to provide for him. Again, the Gemara is going to say pshita. Of course, if he acted negligently, and why would you have to pay him back? So why do we need this case? Lo tzricha, right? The reason why we need this is debenisan marcha kechad ashla ubetishrei marcha ketrei ashle. That during Nisan, the ships are usually distant themselves one rope from the riverbank, right? Because it's right after the rainy season. And during Tishrei, they do two ropes because there's less rain. It's after the summer, right? Ha v'ka azil b'yome Nisan l'mekom Tishrei. So let's say he went during the days of Nisan to the place of Tishrei. Mahu d'teima d'shayi nakiv azil. So you might have said that it doesn't constitute negligence. He was just doing the routine of what he did before. Kamashmalan. And so the Braisa comes to tell us, no, that's not the case. I ended up reading the whole thing there. That does constitute negligence because it's somewhere that you have to think about. How full is the river going to be? Is it a place that you should be sailing, or is it not a place that should be sailing? So I'm not going to read the rest of this. There's another Braisa here that talks about a caravan that's in a desert. But it's interesting to see that there are halachot around these types of things, right? That how they traveled, what were the customs of travel? You know, the same way now, like if you went on a car trip with somebody and, you know, do you chip in for gas? Do you not chip in for gas? Like, what is it that you have to chip in for? This is basically what these braisas are here to discuss.
I think there's also something very intimate about this kind of travel, right? I don't know how many people were in a caravan, right? It's not two people, but they're setting up shop for a long time, right? They're traveling. Let's say they're going from Babylonia to the land of Israel or vice versa, right? And they have to deal with all of the different travails of the journey, some of which could be weather or the terrain itself. Some of it could be marauders, right? Like meaning all of these things, but then, and they're together, like they're thrown together in a way that means they have to have terms of engagement with each other, yes, with externals.
Yes, and I think the idea of the caravan is you're there to protect each other. It's by nature a partnership.
Right, exactly. And so I think it's even more, if I may be so bold, I think it's even more than like going on a, you know, getting a ride somewhere, Boston to New York, and you're going to chip in for gas, because it was so much longer of a time. And they have to set up tents, and you have to, are there women with you, and who's protecting whom? And I don't know. It just seems.
Right. And it was more dangerous. It was just more dangerous. All right. I'm going to move on now. We have a Mishnah here. I'll just do a tiny piece of the Gemara. Hagozel sadeh mechaveiro. So if somebody steals a field from another person, unitzalu amasikin, and then masikin. Some English translations are extortionist, but in other words, the idea is that someone else comes and takes it from the robber, okay? That's basically the idea here of what happens. But the extortionist is that it would be like a person from the government. So in other words, it's like someone from the government forcibly says, I'm taking this land. So someone stole it, right? Shimon steals the land from Reuven. But then the government comes and says to Shimon, I'm taking the land, even though he stole it. Ima kat medinahi. If it's like a issue, a plague of the land, meaning this is something that's often happening from the king, from the government, right? They're taking, you know, people's property. Omerlo, the robber can say to the owner of the field, Haresha laklafanecha, behold, what is yours is before you. Meaning say, I'm not liable for the loss of the field because you would have lost it anyways. Imachmat hagazlan. But if the field was taken on the count of the robber, meaning this was not something that normally happened, chayv la'amid lo sadecher, the robber actually has to provide him with another field. Now, again, how do you make that distinction? You know, it's not clear. The Gemara is going to explain this later on. The first part of the Gemara is, though, is that they have a different reading. We have the word masikin, right, for this word of these extortionists. But there was also, with a samach, there was also a reading of this Mishnah with matzikin, with a tzadi. And then from here, the Gemara basically explains why either one could be correct. They quote a pasuk for each one, where either with a samach or with a tzadi, and that it's a connection to land and to taking land, and so that either reading could be okay. I thought the Gemara passage is interesting because sometimes we see these words and you're just like, oh, it's a Hebrew word. And then here we sort of see that a lot of the basis for the meaning of these words actually come from Tanakh, right? It's not sort of like, you know, just the word developed on its own, but it actually is a word that you could trace back to a meaning in Tanakh itself.
That's our DAF discussion for the day. Thank you for joining us. Rank us, review us where you get your podcast. Come talk to us on our Facebook page and tell us what you think of this stuff. Thank you to Rabbi Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hadron website. And until tomorrow, go and learn.